Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Amy Friedman. I'm the appellant in this matter, and I request 3 minutes rebuttal time, please. I think the court's probably familiar with the facts of the case in the brief, and so some things that I'd like to say that aren't in the brief, but the most important thing, I think, is that Mr. Guerin came to the court with unclean hands in April of 2020 when we tried this case. He was over $7,000 behind in his child support. From June of 2019 up until the time of trial, he had only made one $100 payment. During that time period, he was under an obligation to complete income withholding paperwork. He did not do that from June to September of 2019 when he was receiving unemployment benefits. He did not do that in September to November of 2019 when he had a part-time job. He did not do that from November of 2019 to the time of trial, April of 2020, when he had full-time employment. During that entire time, he did not complete income withholding, and no monies were withheld from his pay to pay his child support. Of course, that was the time that this entire case was pending, the time when you would expect someone to be on their best behavior. He indicated in his testimony that he did not complete that income withholding paperwork because he felt that if he did so, it would leave him with, in his mind, an insufficient amount of money to live on. It seems a little strange that he was okay with leaving his son with an insufficient amount of money to live on. He also refused, pursuant to our temporary order that we had entered back in September of 2017, to negotiate in good faith on a permanent order following Isaac's first year in school in the Boston area.
Was there anything specific in there about negotiating as to child support or just child custody?
It talked about us renegotiating the order and the parenting plan. It did say specifically about schedule, but there's testimony clearly in the record that's uncontroverted where I discussed that we talked about the child support, his living arrangements, and how if Isaac was going to spend substantial time, I wanted him to be able to improve his housing situation. So there is evidence in the record that child support was part of those discussions. He was also, as a result of the testimony trial, you can see that he was fired from his job where he was making about $56,000 a year for cause related to a text message he sent. And there's evidence in the record that from November of 2019, when he obtained full-time employment working at a retail seafood counter until trial, he had undertaken no efforts to seek employment in his career field that he'd had for 20-plus years in the beverage distribution industry. Despite these things, despite these this evidence of unclean hands, what was the result at trial? Well, in my mind, the result was that he was really rewarded for that behavior, not held accountable for it. The almost $7,000 arrearage was nearly completely wiped out, and his child support was by a retroactive reduction in his child support. Also, the court really seems to have treated Mr. Guerin and I differently, because I was arguing that you should calculate child support based on his earning capacity, which I thought was about $56,000 a year, or at a minimum, look at his last 4 years of tax returns and annualize his income into an average and use that number. He was arguing that his child support should be calculated just based on his most recent employment, his current employment at the time of trial, which was clearly a level of underemployment. What the court did to with respect to me, though, was impute some income to me. And the reasons for my lack of earning income, I think, were clearly detailed in the record and justifiable.
Didn't you agree, though, that it would be equitable for the court to impute earning capacity to you?
I didn't agree that it would be equitable for it to impute earning capacity to me. The judge said in this kind of pseudo-settlement discussion, do you think $12 minimum wage is fair? Or he might have said equitable. And I said, well, yes, it was, I'll be honest with you, an extremely awkward moment. Do I think that I could go make $12 an hour in Massachusetts? Certainly I do. Am I capable of leaving my home and my disabled child and working full-time making $12 an hour? Absolutely not. If I had known, or if I had anticipated that kind of discussion being had, there's a whole host of things that I would have talked about. What was it going to cost me to have someone in my home caring for my child so I can go make that $12 an hour? What reductions to my income should be applied associated with imputing income to me? That's one of the problems, I guess, when you look at these issues and you impute income or you use earning capacity, is that you then have to go on to the speculative job of trying to figure out what deductions should be associated with that imputed income. A good reason to at least maybe average and annualize someone's earnings over what is actually there in the last 3 or 4 years. And one thing I did for the court in this case, and you can see it with this kind of odd discussion that occurred on the record, is I said, look, we've got historical numbers. Go back and do the math historically. You know, when he started earning $60,000 a year, calculate the support then. When he lost that job and had a reduction, I gave the court the numbers. This is what he would owe if he was earning based on the unemployment benefits. This is what he would owe based on the part-time pay. This is what he would owe based on the full-time pay at the reduced level job. Then going forward, let's figure out what the next number should be. Should it be earning capacity, what he earned in the beverage distributorship career, or should it be an annualized or an averaged amount based on the last 3 or 4 years of income that he has? So we can do the historical math, and that's what I asked the court to do. And then the court has to make a decision what numbers to use going forward. Interestingly, you know, I would have been better off if the court would have assessed me at $60,000 a year earning capacity than at minimum wage. You know, it put us both at $60,000 a year, and the support, I think, would have been a much fairer and more equitable number, and a number that's necessary to meet the needs of this child. So I see him into my rebuttal time, and I'll sit down for a few moments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Friedman. All right, Ms. Robb.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Samantha Robb, and I represent the appellee, Scott Guerin, in this case. And specifically, this case focused on the modification of child support. And frankly, we believe, the appellee believes, that the trial court got it right, sort of on all issues across the board. And I would like to first address the appellant's argument regarding calculating child support for Mr. Guerin. The appellant argues that the trial court should have calculated child support based on Mr. Guerin's earning capacity. However, we believe the trial court appropriately ordered Mr. Guerin's child support obligation based on his actual income. Nebraska case law states that, as a general matter, the party's current earnings are to be used in calculating child support. The Nebraska child support guidelines provide that, if applicable, earning capacity may be considered in lieu of a parent's actual present income. It was not applicable in this case to...
Hasn't the court, though, historically looked at in cases where a party's current earnings are lower than what they otherwise could be through some fault of their own, either being terminated for cause or just taking a job that pays less? Hasn't the court looked at those reasons for the reduced amount of earnings that they're making?
I believe you're right, Your Honor, that the court has looked at that. At the same time, it's important to look at each case individually. Case law also says that earning capacity should be used in calculating child support only if there's evidence that the parent can realize that capacity through reasonable efforts. And so here, yes, Mr. Guerin had worked for a number of years in a specific industry, but I think equitably we also need to understand that an individual is not obligated to remain in one specific career path, career field, for the entirety of his career. And while Mr. Guerin had stopped working in the warehouse industry, he was still trying to find jobs in that industry. He worked for a little bit at Eagle Distributing and was subsequently let go. He's still sought work in the warehouse industry, but ultimately he was able to find full-time steady employment at Absolutely Fresh Seafood. And it's, you know, our understanding that it's a steady income and that his child support calculation should have been based on that actual income and not his earning capacity. On the next argument, we would like to, appellee would like to say the child court appropriately imputed income to the appellant. As appellant noted, she moves the court to use Mr. Guerin's earning capacity to calculate child support, yet in the previous argument, she resists using a minimum wage earning capacity to be attributed to her. I think it should be noted, appellant has a professional degree. Mr. Guerin has never graduated from college, and so just the lowest threshold of attributing minimum wage to her is just sort of the baseline.
Should the court not take into consideration the special circumstances or extenuating circumstances of the party?
I believe the court should take that into consideration, and it is very clear that the appellant does have a special needs child that she takes care of. At the same time, I do believe that the child is in school, and while she may not be capable of going back to her professional, utilizing her professional degree as an attorney, I think, and she had even admitted that it should be reasonable for just a baseline minimum wage. I think it's also important to note, and Your Honor, I think you had asked this, that yes, in her testimony at trial, she had stated that she believed it was equitable to attribute minimum wage to her, and she had actually given the trial court judge that $12 figure of the minimum wage in Massachusetts. And I think it's also important to note that to say that the appellant couldn't make any income without acknowledging her lifestyle and her marriage would be inappropriate. And again, she has a professional degree. Mr. Guerin never graduated college. And so just the lowest threshold of minimum wage, imputing minimum wage to her for the child support calculation was appropriate. We would also like to say the appellant waived her right to assert prejudicial error on appeal. So appellant argued for the first time in her brief that the trial court erred in either having a resolution or a mediation discussion on the record and or prejudging the case prior to receiving all the evidence. Nebraska case law provides that the failure to make a timely objection waives the right to assert the prejudicial error on appeal. When an issue is raised for the first time in an appellate court, it will be disregarded inasmuch as the lower court cannot commit error in resolving an issue never presented and submitted to it for disposition. And I think most importantly, one may not waive an error, gamble on a favorable result, and upon obtaining an unfavorable result, assert the previously waived error, which I believe is what the appellant did here. During that sort of discussion, as Ms. Or the appellant indicated on the record, she had never once made a timely objection, anything like that at any point during the record, and yet asserts that error here on appeal. The trial court also appropriately did not make a retroactive award of child support. The general rule in Nebraska has been to allow a modification of a child support order prospectively from the time of the modification order itself. And I would just like to take a moment to kind of talk about that stipulated temporary order of September 2017. The parties entered into that themselves. Mr. Guerin was not represented by counsel. The appellant has some experience in family law. And so really that was sort of could be considered something beneficial, obviously, for the appellant, the stipulated temporary order. And it was kind of in this order, I think that the appellant was really using this as a way to be able to remove the child from the jurisdiction to Massachusetts by offering no child support, that neither party would pay child support. And that's what the stipulated temporary order said. And the appellant correctly noted that specifically regarding the schedule, the parties were to revisit this stipulated temporary order after a year of the child being in Massachusetts. Regarding the schedule, the plain face of the language said that neither party would pay child support. And that was in effect.
That was a temporary order.
Yes.
Right. So yes. That's not a permanent order, a final order.
Yes, absolutely not.
So what's our baseline when we're looking at how child support should be set? And it's a modification, but what are we modifying from? Are we modifying from zero, which is when the stipulated temporary order? Are we modifying from the prior order that existed before that? Are we modifying from the $700 order that superseded the zero order? What's our baseline as we review this?
Sure.
What are we modifying from?
Sure. Well, I think the baseline would have began sort of at that stipulated temporary order with child support at $0. At the same time, then we had a further temporary order entered in October of 2018 with that $700 value. So I suppose maybe that last in time order then, temporary order at $700, would maybe be your baseline of modifying from.
Counsel, can you address the court's authority to retroactively reduce child support? Because there's the $700 order that went into effect saying effective, what, November 2018, mm-hmm. Child support would be at $700. Then when the court enters its permanent order, it goes back and reduces that amount from like July maybe of 2019 forward. What's the court's authority? Isn't child support vested at the time that it's supposed to be paid?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that I have the answer for that question. I think it's within the court's discretion to be able to decide when child support should be determined retroactively. And I think the trial court used its discretion in this matter to, you know, not preserve that and not award the retroactive child support. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you very much, Your Honors. The appellee requests that all decisions of the trial court be affirmed.
Thank you. And how much time did we have remaining for Ms. Friedman?
2 minutes and 51 seconds, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Friedman?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just going back to a few things. First, child support's always modifiable, okay? That's the first thing. Also, in the record, Mr. Guerin also acknowledged that in that settlement discussion related to the move, he acknowledged that we talked about the child support issues in that mediation as well. That's in the record. Mr. Guerin reinstated this case, okay? As you know, it was dismissed on progression. When I discovered that, I filed in Massachusetts. I took the position that under the UIFFA, that Mr. Guerin's actions had placed the child in Massachusetts, and it was sufficient to have jurisdiction of both issues, custody and child support in Massachusetts. The courts didn't agree with me. And so the child support issues came back to Nebraska as a result of Mr. Guerin reinstating that case. The court can go back to the date that the case was reinstated. So by virtue of reinstating a case that was filed in 2017, that might be one of the baselines that you can look at, Judge Arterburn, is you could go back to that date related to support issues.
When you talk about child support always being modifiable, are you saying it's okay for the court to retroactively reduce the amount of child support that had already been ordered?
Well, the question that I think this kind of relates to one of the questions that you asked opposing counsel. I think once child support is ordered, it and accrues, it's preserved, that it can't be changed retroactively. The snag in this case is that was under a temporary order.
Right.
So that's the issue. You know, there was a little bit of discussion about what transpired in the middle of this case, which wasn't really like the presentation of evidence, but more like a discussion that everyone was having, and whether I sufficiently objected to that. And what I'd say with respect to that is I was trying to be very respectful and to the court. There were, I think you, if, when you read the records, you'll see I say, I don't really know what to do. This is a difficult position that I'm in because I don't know what these numbers would be and I'm not really understanding what we're doing here. I did kind of lose my patience ultimately and I said, unbelievable. As a lawyer, do I wish I would have said objection rather than unbelievable? I guess that would have been a better word to use. And we all know what they say about people that represent themselves, so our lawyers that represent themselves. With respect to my lifestyle, or it's not my current husband's job to support, financially support Isaac, although he does it and undertakes it with joy. And it's not, I should not be having to use my child's special needs trust funds to support another child. The importance here is that as a parent, we all have obligations to support our children emotionally, socially, and financially. So Mr. Guerin has that obligation, and that's one that he should be fulfilling. On the earning capacity issue, I cited a number of cases in the brief. If you go to page 7, the proposition of law there talks about Encontro versus Jacobs, Anderson versus Anderson, Schultz versus Schultz, Grejovec, and Featherkeel. Those are all cases that talk about using earning capacity in lieu of actual earnings.
Ms. Friedman, you've used your time. So
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Friedman and Ms. Robb. And we will take the matter under submission.